This is Screen Divers. On this week's episode, we are talking about Rounders. This movie was directed by John Dahl. It came out in 1998. It has a running time of 121 minutes. It was made for a budget of $12 million and it grossed, in its opening weekend, $22.9 million. This movie features Matt Damon, Edward Norton, John Turturro, Famke Janssen, Gretchen Mol, John Malkovich, Martin Landau, and a long list of character actors that would be too long to mention in detail. This was a Miramax Films production, and it was also produced by Spanky Pictures. How are you, Ricky?
Hello. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. How are you, Steve?
I'm all good. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Kev?
I'm fucking great. I haven't gotten up this early to do a show in a long time, so this is good.
Well, we thank you and we salute you. On this week's episode, we have a very special guest. Kevin Mola, a.k.a. The Mulverine, is one of the co-hosts of one of my favorite podcasts, one of my two favorite podcasts. Thank you. The name of the podcast in question is In This Episode, Everybody Dies. They talk about movies pretty much like we do. If anything, they were an inspiration for this podcast. And I am so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. That was a very warm welcome. I really appreciate that. I'm very happy to be here. Very happy to meet the other two culprits in this little endeavor. I've been listening to and enjoying your shows. They're good. They're really funny.
That's high praise. Well, high praise.
Thank you.
That's well, high praise. Very insightful too.
Well, let's not start talking bullshit, all right? Let's keep it jamming, all right? See, you were doing well, and then it fucking just shot the mark.
When we got told that we were, like, good, like, going to sleep material, that was, like, a big shock.
I like to think about it as ASMR, all right?
No. Don't sell yourself short. It's really
it's
good.
It's a favorite podcast of comatose patients.
Oh, mate.
Holy shit. Okay, so we picked this movie today because I think it's also one of Kev's favorite films.
Did you know that this was a favorite of mine?
I'm pretty sure because I heard you mentioning this on another podcast, and the lack of enthusiasm from the Ben and Chad was disparaging for me as a listener because I thought they'll never do it.
Yeah,
you love them both. They love you.
Of course I do, but they're still not sophisticated as we are.
You're blushing, Kev. Oh, Kev's blushing. Anyway, Ricky, what's this movie about?
So, in a world where aces are highs and twos are low, Matt Damon's about to get a broken nose because of Ed Norton.
Holy shit.
That's spot on.
Well done.
All right, so, should I do a little bit more?
Yeah, please.
Okay,
please.
All right. Matt Damon's character is in a world that is very seedy and it involves a lot of high risk money. And we are going through the world of New York, not through what you're used to, but more through gambling dens left, right, and center.
In a world. Right before recording this today, Ricky, you sent me the trailer, the original trailer for this
film. Oh, I didn't watch it, man. I didn't have time.
It has that typical, like, I smoked 1,000 cigarettes, and that's what you were doing now, Kev, which is in a world.
It's exactly in a world of CD poker.
You know, I miss
tables.
That guy, man. People just – is it over because people are, like, demonizing cigarettes all of a sudden? Is that what's going on?
No, it's because people don't listen to trailers. And
no,
you know,
is it possible that they died because
– Maybe. But also, like, you get – Sally was saying this earlier today that she – In recent trailers, she is reading more to the kids. So if the kids are watching, like, I don't know, the new Transformer trailer, there is less voiceover and more written elements to the trailer.
There's no voiceover anymore. It's
really,
you know, I think there is a movie. There's a comedy called In a World, I think it's called. And it's about the daughter of a very famous, Kev, what's the name of, is it a name for to that profession? The guy that did this over trailers?
Yeah. It's just that's what I do, man. It's voiceover.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. How's your career going?
It's great. I'm also doing a podcast on the side that makes no money. It's awesome.
No, but it used to be a thing. And let me see if I can find Let me see, because this makes for great entertainment now. So,
I mean,
I'm a jet now in Southern Kev.
I mean, every single trailer we got on a VHS when we were young, I mean, it had a voiceover guy.
I loved it.
That was so good.
Yeah.
It is especially cool, the really dodgy, like subpar science fiction movies.
Yes.
Totally.
Dude, Fred Malamad, the guy that we were talking about in El Cesar, is one of the communists in that movie. The guy with the glasses and the beard. Mm-hmm. He's akin, in my head, is akin to Tobolowsky as a character actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's in this as well. The movie's called Inner World, and as Lake Bell, as the... She's kind of walking in her father's footsteps as a career in voiceover work, but it's obviously, you know, the industry has changed. The movie came out in 2013. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Do you want to talk about that movie instead? Or
yeah, let's do that. Sounds great. Yeah. We'll do
you're the one who picked the movie, Umbar, so it's up to you. Let's like do a complete about turn. And actually, while we're at it, let's do Inside Out, because I know that film Inside Out.
Oh, my God.
So,
yes, let's do that.
What was everybody's first experience with this movie?
I was hoping you'd ask that question. When I remember seeing the trailer for this movie when it was coming out, and I saw like poker and all this. I did. My eyes rolled a complete 360 in my head. I was like, that looks so fucking stupid, man. You know, blah, 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 this, that, and the third. And I was like, I would never watch that movie. And then somehow, some way, a few years later, or maybe even many years later, I ended up watching the movie and I was like, this is so fucking good. Yeah. And it became like a little bit of a Hey Beastmasters on kind of situation between that and then me just, you know, opting in to watch it. I've seen this movie so many times. This is a modern noir film, as much as you can have a modern noir film. It has all of the elements of a noir, except that in classic noir, everybody kind of dies at the end. There's no happy ending to those classic noirs.
Say everybody,
you know? Everybody dies at the end.
Everybody dies. Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay. Everybody. Wow, that was funny.
Like, subscribe, link in the comments.
Smash that bell.
Very nice. Very nice. So this very, very quickly became a favorite of mine. The acting is absolutely superb. There's no other movie like this. This is a movie that is like in its own category, right? Like Roadhouse, right? Like there's no other bar brawl movies about bouncers, you know? That's why Roadhouse is great. You know, this movie, there's no other movie
the
like it.
The original Roadhouse, not that piece of shit with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, the original. That movie is not Roadhouse, dude. Jesus. Just like the new Point Break is not Point Break. Yeah. It's some other movie. So, you know, this movie, it's in a class of its own. The acting is superb. The script is excellent. The dialogue is just spot on and great. The mood, the cinematography, the lighting, like everything about this movie is so good. It is... it is a modern noir, like I said, if there ever was one, and this movie is like a 10 all the way around. I can't think of anything bad about it. The music, soundtrack
ratings
is so
at the end.
Good. Hey. I know.
Christ. All right, that was the show. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
guys. See you next week.
Re-rating this thing.
I know we're trying to keep it tight nowadays, but come on, ratings at the
shit
end.
To do, Jesus. You got shit to
right, let's do another take on that. This is a modern classic. I'm not going to say what my rating is now. I'm going to save that until the end. Next person, go ahead.
Ricky, what was your experience?
Kind of very similar to Kev in terms of I'm not saying I'm much younger than you guys, but I am much younger than you guys. And so I
like how you did that.
I saw it.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do that. You know, it's a constant fucking reminder. All right. I come in here with the usual middle age energy, and you have to fucking.
Easy,
anyway,
big cat.
So I've been trying to look up what the US version of Sky is. And it seems it's Dish Network or whatever it is. But Sky in the UK, it was a satellite service for TV, and they would have a movie channel. And on one of, you know, had we had the movie channel, and one year I remember very clearly that I caught Rounders, and it must have been in 1999, I caught Rounders on TV, and I loved it. I was like, this is really good. And the way Sky works is that they keep the same films and they play them every single week around the same time or at different times, but on different
days. It's akin what HBO was doing with Beastmaster. That's why Kev always says Beastmaster's on.
So for me, that's what Rounders was. I would jump in halfway through the film, a quarter of the way through the film, even the last three quarters of the film, and I'd just rewatch it. So for about 6 months of 1 year, Rounders became that film for me, a sort of comfort film where whenever it came on, I'd just flick it on and be like, yep, cool, I'll watch it from this point.
You know, that's one thing. You know, I think comfort should be considered a double-edged sword, every aspect of it, because it comes at a cost. Like, I do remember the scenario you just described and the one that Kev talked about as well. It was a time in which, you know, when you had terrestrial television, you know, going back to a different world, basically, that is not that further away than, you know, actually it is. It's fucking 30 years ago. But anyway,
like, feels like 10 minutes ago. Is,
it really hurts, man. Just thinking about it, it does. Holy shit.
Dude, I still remember black and white TV.
Dude, we come from a time where 88 miles an hour was fast. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, ideally, though, there was a time in which you could just channel surf and you came across something. It's completely unexpected. And it's a small hit of something that can easily just restore a little bit of your sense of wonder, because it could throw your plans off. You could be late for something, or all of a sudden you weren't entertained. You were bored. Now you know what I mean? Like, and it seems to me that doesn't happen anymore, because all these variables have been removed. It's akin to finding a $10 bill in a jacket that you haven't worn in a bit.
I agree.
There's an entire generation that will not know what that means, because cash is dead. So it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
something to be said for that I've been having that conversation with a lot of people lately, you know what I mean? About just discovering things on your own, or just sitting in the quiet, you know what I mean? Or trying to teach your kids how to do that.
Being bored, man.
Being bored, you know, or like trying to teach my kids that sort of stuff, you know, and you have you have to invent it artificially, because it doesn't happen on its own, because you don't have those situations anymore. And then the other thing I wanted to say quickly, what's that, Ricky?
No, you got,
he's got kids
on,
as well. That's why you guys have this in common. You have kids. How many kids have you got, Kev?
I've got two.
And so that's Ricky.
And he has two as well. And I think you're a girl. You have a girl and a boy as well, right?
Yeah.
Same here. So I think the other thing I wanted to say about this movie is that, you know, something that we've talked about endlessly on the show is this is now certainly a comfort food movie for me. It is one of my favorite comfort food movies. And anytime I'm feeling, you know, in that kind of place where I need something like that, I'll throw this on, you know, as much as I would throw Seinfeld on, or King of the Hill, or The Simpsons, or something like that. So,
I was going to say, Kev, that what you were saying about having children and all that stuff, have you ever got to that point where they've been fed so much of this streaming service that, you know, it's episode after episode of the same show, that the minute that you say, you know what, we're in a hotel room, we're in another part of, you know, we don't have our comfort of the streaming service, why don't you just watch what's on terrestrial TV? And they go, but I didn't want this to come on next. And oh my God, you just deal with it, and maybe you'll find something new, like I did. What I'm saying is that sometimes I'm in a situation where, like, the internet isn't working. I can't even hotspot my phone, so I'm just like, watch, you know, over here it's ABC Kids, and in other countries it will be different kids like channels. And I will get my 3-year-old will sometimes be like, but I wanted to watch more of that show, and it's now moved on to the next show. And we have to sit there and explain to her, like, you're watching ABC Kids, so you get what you've been given. We can't change it. We can't give you the same show again. You get what you're given. Deal with
That's it. Yeah.
And a lot of kids nowadays don't have that.
I mean, we grew up in a situation where we would basically set our alarms for a Saturday morning to watch our 100%. Favorite show. Mm, 100%. And like, it'd be like that Transformers kind of situation where you knew it was going to be on at a certain time.
It is. Look, we're talking about comfort movies and comfort watching in general. It's a valuable point because this movie falls under that category.
So that was my memories of this film before rewatching it recently. Steve, what is your memory?
Surprisingly enough. This is my first watch.
What? No. Fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I was very surprised. It's one of those movies where it's never come up for me. It's something.
Yeah. Open. So your first time was here?
Yeah. I told you.
I was your first. Is that what you're saying?
You were my first. Yep. We rounded that off.
Dude, that was fucking great. Nice job.
Okay, so I'm surprised because Gretchen Moll, she did the Betty Page biopic.
Oh my god, was it her?
Yeah.
And what? She's also in Broadwalk Empire as
Oh my god. So good.
I completely forgot.
Yeah, she was in Donnie Brasco as well, wasn't she?
So. I was going to just say that was her first film, actually.
Yeah.
Hey, another thing is connected to this because I sent a message to him. There's I said in this episode, Everybody Dies is one of my favorite podcasts. I have two. No, with ours as well as being the third one, but obviously. obviously. I'm my biggest fan. Fucking hell. All right.
Yeah. So, have another rail, dude. Go ahead.
No, I'm smelling my finger because I just scratched my ass. But
that too.
Let's not be crass. Okay. All right,
sorry.
It's all right. So the other show that I listen to fervently, and Kev, I know that you know you guys have covered this recently on one of the podcasts because I did open Chad's eyes to this. I made a point and I said, don't discard horror altogether as a genre, particularly in the times we live in, because it's one of the remaining bastions of a genre where you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And there's a lot of good stuff coming out. A lot of good stuff. That it's not just horror, but it's cross genre. You know, the other podcast in question is Horror Weekly, and if you support the show, you get access to the Friends of Horror Weekly. So we pay, you know, £2 or $2 or whatever the fuck it is. I'm more than happy because I feel guilty in getting content for free. That's not ideal. In fact, I need to start supporting the show again on Patreon. And I'll take this little chance to, if you manage to go and listen to the podcast spearheaded by Kev, our guest, Ben and Chad, you should support the show. And in order to do that, you can support them on Patreon. That's a way for them to keep producing episodes. That's now, true. At some point, we'll set that up as well, so you can support us as well. All right, those Mars bars are not going to pay for themselves.
They really don't.
So at some point. But Horror Weekly is a great show. The host is super insightful. And if you support the show, you get access to this group. In this group, there is a gentleman called David Joshua Smith. Now, why am I mentioning this now? He was meant to join us for the Blood Simple episode. I agreed with him today. And guys, I didn't tell you. But he's going to join us for Glengarry Glen Ross, which is on the schedule.
Oh, man, that's such a good movie, dude.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do, you know, maybe you can join us as well for that. But
anytime.
David Joshua Smith is a dailies colorist. That's his job, all right? His job is to grade film. And guess what? I sent him a message because as I was doing a little bit of a screen dive to find factoids, you know, and I didn't do the research this time around because I stopped really early because I had other shit to do. I found out that he worked on a show called Evil. Evil is a TV show, and it's directed by John Dahl, which is the guy who directed this movie.
Oh, man. Yeah. Really?
When I told him we were doing Rounders, he's like, oh, why didn't you tell me? Like, well, you can come up for a different show.
Sure.
So, but yeah, so shout out to you, Dave. Very talented guy. If you guys have seen The Penguin, he's great at that. He's a daily colorist for that as well.
This is great. Great cover art, man. Horror Weekly, I just pulled it up.
You need to listen to the show, George. It's a solo thing. He does it on his own. We actually featured on his show.
Really?
We got a 12-minute spot on the best of 2024, the last episode of the year. So we gave our picks, basically. I interrupted
He loved me, by the way.
Huh?
He loved me, by the way.
Everybody loved. You're everybody's darling.
Somebody really loves him. On the back. Yeah.
Everybody loves Ricky.
Yeah.
You know.
Fuck.
We're going to reconnect to what you were saying, how this was your first time when we watched it together here, right? And when the credits rolled, fucking Harvey Weinstein.
We don't talk about him.
No, he was one of the main producers.
Did everybody have a moment where they went?
Audibly.
Every time.
Talking of Harvey Weinstein, I know we've lost Kev again. But anyway, talking of Harvey Weinstein, we've got a copy of Down and Dirty Pictures, which is the 2006 book about Miramax and how Miramax basically took over Sundance and took over indie films. And the bit they've got about Rounders, a lot of it is about how...
In the book. It's in the book in question. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of it is about how... Everybody would turn around to John Dahl and said, oh, Harvey's not going to like your choice. Or, oh, Harvey wants you to use this. And, oh, you don't want a phone call from Harvey. And John Dahl just stuck to his guns. Nice. One of the things that he wanted was he wanted jazz throughout the movie. And he wanted it because he felt like poker, jazz, great.
Yeah.
So on the premiere of the movie... Matt Damon turned around to Harvey Weinstein and said, oh, it's a really good movie. And Harvey Weinstein said, yeah. Here's a VHS of the actual copy of the film because he had edited out the amount of jazz that was meant to be in the movie.
You're joking.
So Harvey Weinstein still had his dirty fingers all over this film.
Of course.
Yeah. So the original, there's actually two different soundtracks to this. The first soundtrack, which was
for the very reason that Ricky just mentioned, probably, right?
No, the first soundtrack didn't have jazz at all.
Yeah, that for the very reason that Ricky has just mentioned. It's for Weinstein influence.
Yeah,
fucking terrible, man. But again, I do miss the Miramax days. I think our generation was very, very lucky. We were very, very lucky. You know, don't forget that, you know, anything
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, like, we're one of those generations that have gone from analog to digital, and we've been through all forms of digital. We've been through, you know, we've been through Laserdisc, we've been through DVD, we've been through beta tapes, we've been through Blu-rays. We are that generation.
You're skipping HD DVD.
HD.
Again, I mentioned another. I fought that fucking battle, dude.
Yeah, you're an advocate.
I was an advocate. I was at parties going, no. Because I was one of those assholes that bought the HD DVD drive for the Xbox 360. And that kept buying HDVD.
How did that go for you?
I think that's why they lost the war, by the way. HDVD, HDVD, it's so hard to pronounce. It doesn't roll off the tongue like Blu-ray. That's one, it's got to be, right?
Also, they didn't support porn.
And I tell you something else.
Oh, yeah.
Because the cases, all right, it was a war. It was a format war, just like VHS and Betamax. And the cases for HDVD was red, right? I remember this. Why red versus blue is one of those rivalries that it's still like it's ingrained in people's heads, you know? Why didn't you just fucking call red rays? If you called the red ray, it would have won, but it also doesn't roll off the tongue well. Hey, no. You got the red ray?
Red ray. I don't like that format. That Ruby format reminds rays. Me of VHS. Can I have the blue Scarlet. Ray?
Scarlet ray.
because everybody knows that I used to work in basically a posh HMV.
No, everybody doesn't fucking know. We may have mentioned it in an episode.
Maybe you don't. I'll reintroduce
Kev. Kev, ask Ricky how we met.
Ricky, how did you meet Umba?
Okay, so I used to work in retail. So we had a shop within a bookstore called Waterstones in the UK, and we were FOP.
Now hey, Waterstones, it's like BNN?
Barnes & Nobles.
Barnes & Nobles. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, yeah, sure.
And we were part of FOP, which is base, it's HMV, but a kind of posher, like very niche HMV.
Yeah, yeah.
They're even owned by HMV, but the thing that they specialize in is like world cinema. They specialize in world music and vinyls. They were the first between HMV and FOP. FOP were the ones who were like, no, 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 vinyls are the best. And so people would turn up to us like we were Rough Trade or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was around the corner from the coffee hut that Umbar used to work in.
Nice.
One man show, dude. And Ricky can confirm this. I was so fucking good. The line used to stop the traffic.
Really?
I mean,
Ricky, is it true?
That's cool.
There was a long line. Yes.
Yeah.
Stopping traffic, I'm not sure.
You just go with it, man.
Okay, sorry. Yeah? It was stopping traffic. It was a hindrance yes. to Bloomsbury.
Yes. The city. It was a problem for the city.
It was a problem for the city. The mayor even turned up and said, "You've got to stop making good coffee. What's wrong with you?"
It was so good. It was a civic issue.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, I turned up one day and he was like, "You work in Waterstones, we work in FOP, great. £1 coffees to you," which by the way is freaking absurd. But even then it was like $2.70 for a coffee. Hey. So £1 was like, "Oh my god, that's amazing. I will give you as much money.
We had an understanding.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's just put it that way.
It turned out to understand that you had an understanding.
I give you a discount, you give me a discount. All right.
Now, I didn't realize how deep this would go.
Yeah.
Because one day I said to him, like, "Oh, there's this new anime. It's the Professor Layton anime. It's just out. If you want, I can get you the Blu-ray of it." And he was like, "Oh yeah, that sounds great. I'll get me it." So I bought the Blu-ray. Oh, here it comes.
Stop.
What?
Because then you could remember where you are.
Yeah.
Because this is super freaky what you're just doing that right now. Because I forgot about it. And yeah, I have proof here.
Of course you do.
At one stage, my collection had 950 Blu-rays plus. It's insane.
Oh my god,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. As you can see, you know that I tend to collect. Impulse control is an issue. Let's just say that.
Oh, yeah.
So at one point, I got rid of everything. And just a couple of weeks ago, someone came over that hasn't been here for game night in a while. And they gave me something I lent them that I forgot about.
It was that movie.
Oh, there it is. The Eternal
Nice,
Diva.
Dude.
I gave it to him. And I said to him, like, "Don't worry about it. It's on me." And he's like, no, I've got to pay you. And I said, no, don't worry. It cost me like whatever it cost me because I got a discount on it. So just take it. I don't care. And he said, "Free coffees for life." And that's how he got me hooked.
Nice. What was this? What was it? A fucking legal pusher, right? It's just a sample. Just take a sample.
Here's a sample.
How long was this, man? This was like fucking
2010. I remember like turning up to your booth and you were like, "Oh man, check this out." And I was like, "Oh, you've got a 3DS, I'll check it out." And you were playing like Dragon Quest, I think, at the time.
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh, what's the 3D like?" And I looked at it for about 3 minutes and I was like, "Mate, I'm going down to HMV and buying one now." And so both you have been my legal pusher since 2010. Like,
very nice.
Now it's board games. My cupboard's full because you keep sending me Kickstarters.
I always envision our friendship. Out of all the friendships I've made over the years, this is the only one that I can. I think I always saw us as more of a Dante and Randall.
Yeah.
And I saw myself as a Randall. I'm your Randall.
Okay, let's get back on track, guys.
Steve, don't be jealous.
Dude,
don't
feel bad. Don't feel bad.
I've got my Star Wars stuff.
Last night when we did Tron of all movies, which is a great movie. Yeah. And I mean, it was basically a giant cul-de-sac spotted with little dots of talking about the movie in it, man.
Yeah.
And it was rough.
That's a fucking exclusive. That is every episode, dude. That's why I love the show.
No. Way more
these
than
guys,
usual.
Dude, these guys invented the cul-de-sac.
This is way, way more.
Your role, Ricky, is taken by Chad. Chad is the one that would go with it. And he's also the youngest. So,
oh, there we go. It's true. It's always the young ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is unacceptable, really. This is...
Oh, it is. Mate. It is.
No. We cannot be done enough. All right.
Well, I mean, honestly, dude,
I will fucking die before you.
Can I just say the earliest example of a dead end street or a cul-de-sac was in 1885 in Egypt. I just thought I'd add that in. There we go.
Hey, by the way, nothing to do with the show. I booked my trip to Sharm el Sheikh.
Oh,
nice.
Great.
When?
Nice.
Because, and it's important you all know this, because I'm not gloating. I am a little. But I'm going to do one of the most dangerous dives I've ever done.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because it kept being postponed.
Are you a scuba diver?
Yeah.
You're fucking joking, right?
I didn't know. Why would I know that?
He's going to start sending you videos, Kev. Careful.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I take videos of the sky. You know what I should do? I should skydive and then fucking... Just skydive and then dive. Like, I think you'll die that way. I think you'll die that way.
You want to be Tom Cruise. You want to skydive and start putting on the equipment.
Like, the equipment's already on.
You know what? I'm fucking taller and I don't believe about space aliens. All right, and it is fucking space aliens. So
that's too bad, dude.
Did I say space aliens? I'm like a poor man Tom Cruise.
you're like Tom Cruise, Crooze.
I'm the Tommaso Crusoe.
Yeah, there you Tommaso go. That's Crusoe. It, right there. That's perfect.
Missione Impossibile.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. It's very strong.
Oh.
Very strong. Listen, don't feel bad about this giant cul-de-sac of a mess that we've done for the last hour. To be totally serious,
it's
for a second,
like, it's your fucking fault.
Well, don't I know that? But what we should have done,
what? Tell me,
is we should have got on earlier and just like bullshitted for a while because I've never met these two guys. We've never talked, and then we get all our willies out.
Don't worry, I need to do the editing here. I'll make it work. I will make it work.
I know
it's gonna work.
No, you're gonna make yourself some work. I'm happy to do a guest edit if you need some help.
You want some work? Unpaid work? You can have all the unpaid work you want.
I'll do it, man. I'll cut
you. You work for me now. Welcome to Cromerica.
Hey, is that Ellis Island I see in the distance?
Fucking hell.
Are you American or Americans?
Oh my god. American. Jesus fucking. Kev.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to Rounders. There is one thing I wanted to mention. It's been a while since my last viewing.
Sure.
And it was a comfort movie for me as well. Now, one of the things I found very amusing that I never thought about, in Rounders, Matt Damon does something that he has never done before. He plays his pal and himself all the way through the movie, depending on the sequence. He plays Matt Damon and he plays Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Whenever he's dealing with Edward Norton's character and he's mm-hmm. trying to warn him or trying to turn his life around and change his ways, he turns into Ben Affleck. If you look at the entire way he handles him, it's exactly because you know these two guys are so close.
Best friends.
Yeah, well, they are best friends in real life, and their career kind of paralleled one another throughout the years. But you go back and watch this movie and think about what I just said. There's beats whenever there's one sequence in particular in which is it Michael Matt Damon's character in this?
Yeah, Mike. Yeah. Michael.
And what's Worm, right?
Les Murphy.
Yeah, when he gets told that he's basically, you know, I think it's Ganesh played by John Turturro. Ganesh appears, you know, like this entity while he's you know already disappointing his girlfriend and his partners in the study group that he has. Because they're preparing for a thesis or whatever it is, he shows up and he goes, "Man, I need to talk to you right now." So they go outside and tells him that you need to come and get your friend.
Yeah.
Well, your friend, everybody knows Worm. everybody, this guy's got a terrible reputation. And this is a world where your reputation will follow you around.
Totally.
So this is prior to Matt Damon's character, Michael, finding out that, you know, he's running a VIG. He's basically, you know, he's piling up debt on his friend's name, regardless of consequence, which is pretty bad. And the thing is, you still kind of empathize a little with, I did, with Worm a little, because the friendship is there. It's just that he's completely, if Worm has a friend and he thinks he has a friend, it's Michael. So he does respect the friendship. But the thing is, and it's important that we actually see that sequence when Worm turns around and goes, this is not what I do. This is not how I approach this.
Right.
To him, it makes sense. And to him, he's being a decent friend, but he has no clue. In the real world, it doesn't function. He just doesn't. Sure. I know this, and I think you guys can relate, because I was thinking about it today. I was riding on my motorcycle, and at one point I thought, it was right before recording, and I thought, Have I ever been Worm, or have I ever been the other character on the other side of this friendship? And I think I have been both at some point in my life.
Yeah, I think myself. Yeah,
I'm not either, man. I've definitely been that. Yeah, for sure.
Same.
When I was young and stupid and selfish. Yeah, 100%.
But because this is the things we do when we're young and dumb and full of cum.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Also, no, that's true, but it's also a developmental fact. I mean, as soon as you start to enter puberty, it's like you start learning about self, right? And it becomes about self. Then everything is centered on you. And then it's like only in your like really, I don't know, maybe I'm being generous here, mid-20s, you start to come outside of yourself again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think kids are animals at the end of the day. You guys are parents, so maybe you can... It seems to me that every important lesson I've learned in my life is at the cost of some traumatic experience. I'm not an easy learner. And I think that's why, I have been on the receiving end of that friendship, and I have been that character as well, like you guys mentioned. Sure. But in that particular sequence, sorry, to go back to what we're talking about, circling back to how this thread started, he goes to see him. He meets Famke Janssen, which we'll talk about in a moment, because Steve has a little story to share with you all. Oh. She's Dutch of origin. You know that, right? Famke Janssen's Dutch. Okay, so Steve will take that over in a moment, because he blew my mind. It was actually a distraction. I wish you didn't give me this little factoid while we're watching the movie, Steve. You took me right out. But anyway, they're outside. He gets a hot dog, and all of a sudden, Matt Damon turns into Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, yeah. And the same thing in the basketball gym, too, when he's hiding.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah,
that's the first time I noticed it. It's not the typical, stereotypical role. Because Matt Damon seems to me that every role he took during that, right up until fucking Jason Bourne, the Prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, the funny thing, which I think a lot of comedians have riffed on upon this, he co-wrote most of these roles for himself, which is ridiculous.
Really?
It's like you're writing these parts. I would feel embarrassed just thinking about it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're such a centric character of a story and you write yourself as the prodigy, it's a little arrogant, you know.
But
and this was emphasized by what's happening, that it's topical at the moment. I don't know if you guys have seen the thank you speech that Timothée Chalamet, or whatever the fuck.
I have not watched that. No. I've heard.
You heard about it, right?
Yeah.
He goes, I want to be like one of the greats. You know, that's what I'm thinking. What the fuck? No, Brando, all the people that he mentioned in his thank you speech haven't done something this foolish. It's like you're so full of yourself, it's not a palatable quality.
Who was it that did this? Sorry, I didn't catch
Chalamet.
That. Chalamet.
Timothée Chalamet. I mispronounced his name grossly.
So
but
what are you saying? That he was...
He was being extremely arrogant, and I think when you're at that level of notoriety, you're so detached that you don't realize that you're saying something that is fucking...
He's so young, dude. He's going to fuck himself if he keeps going down on that.
Time travel was not a paradox, I would travel back in time to slap myself in the face. And everyone here would as well.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. It makes me shiver 100%. In the shower just to think about the shit that we said and did.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
Edward Norton, man, he was on fire. In 1998, on fire. He was
fantastic. I mean, he just came off the back of American History X.
No.
Oh, God.
That was after, I think.
No, it wasn't.
No,
it was just before.
Powerful film.
Really? And the reason why he has the goatee when he's in the prison cell.
It's because of the
Yeah. So, and you can, that's why he shaves it off.
You know, I was questioning this because he lost some muscle mass then, because he was quite chunky for American History X. But that's not the breakout role, dude. People got to love him because of
the breakout role.
Primal Fear? Is that what it was?
No, Primal Fear, rather. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Primal Fear was
really
good.
Need to rewatch that.
Yeah. Oh my God. I haven't seen that since the 90s.
I've only seen it once.
You know what I put next to him when it comes down to actors in general, which I don't think he gets his due because he's phenomenal?
What?
Giovanni Ribisi.
Dude does not get his due. I agree.
It's akin to Giovanni Ribisi's career trajectory.
That's
when I think of Ed Norton. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a wide trajectory as well. Like it started at about the same time and it's still continuing.
Yeah,
it is. Wasn't he in a TV show where he plays someone? It's a mistaken identity kind of thing, and that's the foundation for the show.
Is that Sneaky Pete?
No, it is.
That's
it. I've heard that's excellent. That was on Amazon. Yeah, I've heard that's excellent.
It was actually really good.
Yeah,
really good.
Yeah. I mean, I remember him from a thousand things. He's a great character actor, but I don't know why in My Name Is Earl. It keeps popping up.
Was he? In, oh my God, he was in Friends.
Oh. I was hoping you would avoid that.
Everyone's got a show that, you know, they shouldn't be talking about, but apparently Ricky has no fucking shame. So Dawson's Creek and... And Friends.
Oh my God, bro!
And Gilmore Girls.
Yeah,
dude. So Gilmore Girls is based on a place that is like 30 minutes from my house.
Oh awesome!
Yeah.
We can chat about that afterwards, but we've got to talk about Rounders now.
Yeah, we can have a tea party and paint our nails. Also, this is actually a pretty good little nugget, man. Gretchen Mol actually grew up about 45 minutes to an hour from here in Connecticut.
Oh wow!
Wow!
Yeah.
So she was a Gilmore Girl.
No. She wasn't a Gilmore Girl.
She totally was.
in Ricky's mind, let him do what he wants.
Yeah. Well, no, probably not, actually.
That is,
oh my God.
That's such another story.
Anyway.
You're dead for that, bro.
Character actors in this. As we're watching Rounders again, I spotted somebody.
Oh boy.
And it was like a seal. Like it's the camera is on the side as well, so you don't really see him really well. And I caught a couple of frames, and straight away I went, "Is that Angel?" Steve was watching the movie with me. He goes, "What do you mean, Angel Batista from Dexter? It's fucking David Zayas."
Yeah,
David Zayas is one of the cops.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's one of the cops in the lead up to the beating scene.
No, he's one of the state.
That's
cops.
Harrowing, man.
He's one of the state troopers. Totally.
As it happens, you know what's about to happen.
Totally.
The suspense that builds through that entire sequence, the moment he gets out of the car going, "You can't come with me," you know what's coming next. Not because we've seen the movie before. And that's unnerving.
Because it was my first watch. Even I was expecting what was coming.
Oh, it's so bad.
Dude, it's almost like if you can't see that beating coming from a mile away, it's like you're not awake, man. You
know,
like as soon as they pull in the parking lot and he goes,
you see the cop cars, you just go, no,
it's great, that fucking guy sitting next to him who continuously is looking at the deck and you know.
Yeah. It's such a great sequence, man. When the shot of them pulling into the parking lot with the rain and it says state trooper and he goes, municipal workers. And he goes, they work for the city.
It's horrific. And if anything, they really, one of them should have died in that. But I started suspending disbelief because after that happens, they're still conscious. They get up from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No paramedic is called because you would be fucking in a coma after that beating.
Yeah.
And the thing, it's not even why I suspended disbelief. It's Ahmed Damon. You know, you can make allowances for a friend, but that's when I thought, dude, this is a fight. This is now a fight. And it's a mild, like, he reprehends him. He just shows him that he's unhappy with what's going on. I'm going home now. Screw you guys. Like, no, this is a fucking fight. This isn't a single instance in this movie. And I thought, what the fuck, in which Matt Damon's character, Michael, puts Worm against the wall? He fucked his relationship from the moment he comes out. You know, there's no moment in which, even out of respect for the friendship, in which he grabs him by the collar going, what the fuck are you doing? There isn't that. There's he tells him off and he tries to stir him towards. So where am I going with this? You know, in the writing, there must have been something that Worm has done for Michael. And I'm beginning to think if it's something that fell out or if it's something that ended up on the cutting floor and if it was in the script, in which did Worm take the rap for something they did together?
It is mentioned in the film.
But they're talking about...
Steve's right. I think Steve's right. Go ahead, Steve.
Right at the beginning.
Tell him.
So basically, the whole lead up and the whole voiceover to the movie comes to the point where it was a situation where we were both in the wrong. He took the rap for it.
That's right.
So what they were talking about was a high school situation, which has made them cement as friends. They don't talk about why Worm was in the clink.
Prison.
Yeah, apart from...
What? In what? Did you call it the clink?
The clink.
Nice.
It doesn't really get mentioned, but you kind of surmise that it's because he had so much debt that he basically got told, you're either going to prison for X, Y, and Z, or we're going to kill you. And so he took the prison route.
It could have been it.
The guy that plays grandma, that guy is such a piece of shit, man.
I want to put a bow on that whole, the relationship thing. So it's actually it was a great way. The voiceover works well because it was a great way to fill in gaps.
It's a lot of narration, though, Kev.
It's on the nose
in this movie a little bit.
It's like Blade Runner.
I guess. But you know what? Here's the thing. Like it allows for the characters, the connection between the characters, right? So when you have two great actors, they can make a lot out of nothing, right? Or very, very little, right? Because we're talking like relationship between characters. This is something we've been talking about on the show a lot, right? Is that the relationship between characters and what those actors do, that's what makes great. It's a massive part of what makes great films, right? Mm. Because then you start giving a shit about these characters. So what's great about the narration, right? Because some people are like, narration, it sucks in general. I'm kind of 50-50 with it. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not. But here's the thing, is when he starts giving that narration, that's giving that history of the between the two characters, man, it only reinforces the bond that they have and what you see in those interactions between the two of them, okay? Mm. So... the whole thing of it is that he got one of the basketball players on the opposing team to take a dive and he got pinched for it and he wouldn't give anybody up. That is why Mike always allowances. Has his back. Always. Yep. It makes concessions, as you said before, makes those concessions, has his back. And
what are you talking about?
And always, I don't know. And always sticks up for the guy. You know what I mean? Mm. Because like, he's such a piece of shit. I mean, like Worm Lester is such a piece of shit.
Yeah, but again, you understand what I meant by in his head, he's being a decent friend because he believes in it. It's not, Worm is not out to screw Michael. That's the thing. It's such a, there's nuance in this relationship.
I agree.
But he's out to screw everybody else. But he think,
except
how can I
himself.
Put it? And it seems to me as well that Michael knows this. That's why they're still friends.
Right.
Because of this.
He knows how he operates.
If there's somebody that he, no matter what, so he's a scoundrel, but if he has one friend, it's Michael. So it's not trying to take the piss out of Michael. It's not trying to screw Michael over. It's just his nature. Mm-hmm. And if it came down to the clench, he wouldn't hurt Michael. It's still,
ultimately he does.
He does. Of course he does.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's nuanced. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't a single second in which I did, because I've been that guy as well. I know that he sees him as a friend. When they're in the car and he's trying to, you know, it's like that friend that is not drinking for a month and, you know, we'll take turns, right? And all of a sudden it's like, come on, have a drink or whatever. He does that to him.
Mm-hmm. You mean you?
Well, yeah.
Dude, that was a sneak attack. I like,
and
was
the thing
very
is,
nice.
I wouldn't go
very
out of my well way done. To joke around that way with anybody that I didn't have a friendship with.
Yeah.
Sure. That's
all I'm
true.
Saying is, but their friendship is believable. Their friendship is believable.
Not just believable, Edward Norton really plays that character very well.
He does.
Let's just say that. I mean, both Matt Damon and Edward Norton play a very, very close relationship with each other, and they play it very well in this movie.
Look, one thing that his character, the way it was written, it doesn't come across. It doesn't come across to me. It doesn't come across as conniving. It doesn't come across as a liar. It just comes across as someone who skirts around life. That's what he comes across to me.
He comes across to me as an addict.
Yeah, well, of course. Of course, no doubt. 100%. Yeah. But and it's also someone who's turning into a way of life, no matter what, which is really, really bad, obviously.
Yeah.
But right. It's a cycle that he will continue to do. Like, we get no closure about war, man. When he skips, he skips. That's it. He's out.
And
it's good that the movie leaves that thread as well. It doesn't fixate on it, because that's not the point of this movie.
Yeah, right.
No.
You know what I mean?
And he fades. He fades out. Like, he fades right out of the whole movie.
He's just gone. That's
absolutely
it.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
Look, as opposed as they are in the way they operate, Kanash is a very similar character. He also sees Michael as a friend. It's right. Like light and dark, right? When you put, and that's why they can't stand each other. Have you ever had like a friendship with somebody and you couldn't stand their friend for whatever reason? It seems to me that that's the relationship between Kanash, which is John Turturro, Michael, and Worm in this.
But it's respected. It's respected to a point where they can take, obviously Matt Damon doesn't like.
Yeah.
Wait, let
me highlight this. The disparity and the similarity between Kanash. And if you look at the way everyone else treats Kanash as well, they treat him like Worm, but for a different reason. Nobody at that table, whenever they show up, whenever they go to Atlantic City or... No, it's not Atlantic City. It's Vegas.
End is Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, there's the entire kind of montage like of them waiting around the table. And then, funnily enough...
That's Atlantic City.
Whatever, but they're all... It's the usual suspects around the table, right? Sure. They're all waiting for... And there's the entire monologue about how piranhas don't eat each other, and it's wonderfully written.
I just want to say, because we're on that subject right now, there's a great cameo. Let's just say cameo.
Yeah.
Of David Levin and Brian Koppelman in that scene.
Yeah. David Levin. Yeah. Who's David Levin?
The writers.
From the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are both in that section. And they basically just, they're two of the ideas of these are the people with the tells. Mm-hmm. We're showing you their tells.
That's a nugget.
And they're shit peats. Come on.
It's a nugget. Peat. And we don't use that term because we can't use it because it's been taken by, in this episode, everybody.
Yeah, you could use it today.
Yeah. Today we can
use it today.
Fact, why the fuck are you listening to the show? You should go listen to that one. It's much better.
The Kanish and Mike represent a level of normality in that world of addicts.
Yes, okay? But
because you could easily class everybody in there as addicts, right? They're sort of degenerates, a lot of them, right?
Yeah, but also he gets resented by the rest of the group, including.
They get resented by Matt, because of that.
Wait a second. That what I saw was the way Michael treats Kanish is like you decided to live in the middle. This is an extreme thing, and he decided to live in the middle, right? Which is actually a pretty balanced approach in a world that is full of extremes. This is gambling, you know, and particularly in this branch of gambling, which is poker, where the stakes make the game.
Sure.
You know, like you can easily keep winning when you have a blind that is bigger than you.
Sure.
However, that would imply taking fucking risks that an adult human being shouldn't take. Because it would lead to, you know, it's not a healthy way of living. Yet someone like Kanash managed to implement this into some kind of normalcy. But he gets frowned upon because that will never lead to the greatness that Michael aspires to.
That's why Joey Kanish is smarter than everybody else in some respects. But it's really about what you have going on. I mean, he says it in plain English in the movie.
Yeah,
I pay alimony. My kids eat. I have child support. Like, those are things, dude.
Yeah,
you gotta do that.
That's true.
And so he plays that way. Mike doesn't have any of those attachments, so he's able to go, you know what, I'm gonna go fuck
off. He doesn't even have a girlfriend anymore at that point.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's also not a rich man, but he has aspirations in this world.
But I do like this, comparing it to what addicts are or what the different level of addiction is, because what we're watching for the whole movie is we're watching an addict who has given up relapse. That's what we're watching. Yep. And Knipsch is that sort of personality that knows he can't get into the game because it would cost him his life.
Oh, he can't help but hang out with the
because he's got nothing else. Like, you know, he's paying alimony, all of that stuff. And so he's disengaged from his family. So what else is he going to do with his time? He's going to go hang out with the only scene he knows. And so he's not taking part in the drugs. He's not taking part in the addiction. Mm. He's just watching it because he knows the familiarity. He feels the beats. And, you basically are just watching a very wide view of what addiction does to individuals. And the funniest thing is that we were talking about how people dropping out of the film. Mm-hmm. I actually said to Sally towards the end of the film, oh, yeah, Worm's dead, just flippantly. You don't know that. And even in the novelization, it never gets mentioned. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But that is another symbol that, like, he might be dead. Mm-hmm. He might be dead because of his choices.
You know, when it comes down to Kanash, there is one thing, though. There is, and I love that scene. I never realized, because when we fell in love with this movie, because I did fall in love with this movie when I was younger. I had an infatuation with this movie, right? It's a fantasy. That's what this movie is. Because I had my stint with gambling when I was younger as well. And I said to Steve that I wasn't going to mention this in the show, and I'm not going to dwell on it, past it. But it is, you know, impulse control has been an issue throughout my life. And this was, you know, I had my stint with this. So there is a level of tragedy that I didn't want to examine any further in a movie that is rooted in fiction. You know, this is it's a fantasy, this movie. That's what this is. Mm-hmm. And it's a young fantasy as well. When it comes down to, there is one moment in the movie that's very well acted by John Turturro. Matt Damon, as an act of cruelty, because it's very cruel, when he doesn't get what he needs or what he wants in that moment from Kanash, Kanash turns around and with a lot of emphasis says, I'm not going to give you the money. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And it comes across exactly as it should. Or as it was in the script, as preachy. Yeah. And as an act of cruelty, Matt Damon, his retort is brutal.
Totally.
Because he points out to him, it's like, you basically don't have the fucking balls to do what I want to do. That's what he tells him, and it hurts. And that's when that friendship gets a crack. Because you see John Turturro turning around going, you know, and walking away. If anything, that sequence should have gone longer. But it brought gravitas and it brought pathos to a story that it's basically, you know, it's a fun romp in the world of poker. And if there is one thing that bothered me about this movie is my fault. It's not the movie's fault. I'll tell you what it is because I thought about it today. I found it hilarious. And I thought, there's so much fucking, you know, in this episode, Everybody Dies, the guys always talk about whenever there's a reference to TNG or Star Trek, it's a thing that now I find the music, which is Space Pick, right? When they,
would you say space speak?
When you talk about space jargon or whatever you want to call it, terms don't exist, right?
In this,
there's a lot of fucking pocket talk that is like, the kings and emancipated the queen, and there's so much of it that is so almost confusing, and I found that frustrating because I don't know enough, and I'm also relieved that I don't know enough. you know what I mean?
The funny thing is, because of this film, I started watching Late Night Poker. This movie is probably the reason why Late Night Poker got televised. Wow. And because of this film, I watched a lot of it. The scene you were just talking about, I actually found funny for a different reason. And it's totally, again, my fault, but it's also Rick and Morty's fault. And it was throughout this film, I had these moments where it felt a little bit like a heist. There were certain elements of the way they were talking to each other, like a heist. And then all of a sudden, I kept saying to Sally after the odd scene, being like, "You son of a bitch, I'm in."
Are you seeing Kev's face right now?
I literally just watched that two weeks ago. There is a point
where John Turturro goes, like, during that bit where he's like, "I've got a family, I'm doing this. I'm not bailing you out." All of a sudden, he goes, "You son of a bitch." And I'm like, oh my God, he said it. He said it.
Just remember, they went on to write Ocean's 13. Was it?
Yes. There you go.
There you go.
Really?
And there's one more thing, guys, I was thinking about today, how this movie could have had a completely different tone. And it would work. We would watch it and it would be the same type of comfort food, just a different flavor, right? Yeah. If it was like a video game. Because you don't get that. You get the final boss here, which is Teddy. And we're going to talk. I'm going to give Teddy KGB.
Talk about him.
We're going to talk about it because, man, Kev does a fucking killer impersonation of John Malkovich.
Pay him. Pay that man his money. He beat me straight up. Pay him.
Oh my God.
My fucking boss, my old boss at my last job was such a fucking nerd. And every day, man, every day I'd go up to him. It was something new, man. And we got on that. We got on the snow chains thing. I was telling Umba this yesterday. We got on the snow chains thing because I love Trapped in Paradise. And I listened to you guys in that episode and you shit all over it. And I love that movie. Partly because it's so goofy, but him and I were, especially in the winter, we were always like, snow chains, should have got snow chains. and then we got on this Rounders thing, dude. And I mean, we were doing that Malkovich shit daily, all
you
the fucking time. It was
bitch.
Great.
Check.
Mr. Son of a Beach. Let's play some cards.
Like a young man coming in for a
quickie. You must feel good and strong.
So good.
Guys,
Kev sent me a video.
You don't have my money. You are mine.
Did I send you that clip?
You did. Nice. Tell the guys.
Is it of Matt Damon?
Yeah.
It's a brilliant impression.
We didn't do that once, man.
In Malkovich,
this episode, Matt Damon.
Malkovich comes in. You know, he does that on the first day, and then he looks at Matt Damon and he's like, "I'm a terrible actor."
Yeah, so fucking funny.
Yep,
but
so good.
You know, anyway, I like it when he goes. We were waiting for him. By the time he shows up, he was walking on water.
Oh God, of
course. That's what he says. Yeah, gone, Ricky.
But not only did this like introduce me to, and you know, I wouldn't know so much about Texas Hold'em. I wouldn't be playing. Is it Balatro,
man,
or whatever.
I'm all over that. I touched it yesterday.
Yeah.
I made a huge mistake. There's a game that's been released called Balastro.
Dude. Oh, it's addictive.
You know, I made the mistake and I should have paid heed to the comments on social media. Mm. I saw a reel and someone in the comments went, "Are you working at the moment? You got a life? Don't touch this game." And they were right. Wow. It's a small game that mixes solitaire with poker.
With Texas Hold'em, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, but they're like runs. So you start, and if you lose, you have to start again. Yeah. But it's a variation on that, and it's crack.
And
it's so addictive. Have you played it? Ricky, have you played it?
It's on Game Pass. I am five hours in, and I play it on
my... Did you get it for your phone,
no? No. I play it on my... Yeah, I can play it my Xbox from my phone.
No, but there's a version. They made a version for the phone as well.
But this was free. I didn't pay for it. This is free. But anyway, I play it on my PC and I play it on my phone. When I'm like going to bed, I'm like, I'll just have a little go. And no, I'm out. Anyway,
what we're basically doing is, Steve and Kev, if you are tickled in whatever spot we are tickling you right now, at the end of this recording, please fuck your life and download this to your phone.
Get that game.
Yes.
Oh, it's so addictive. Anyway.
Forget about the duties this world imposes upon you. Forget about parenthood.
Before we deep dive into that, which we always will do.
Screen dive.
I like that. That's good. I like what you did there.
Did I just make that sound at you, Umba?
Because screen dive is good.
Anyway.
Because screen divers go deeper. How about that?
That was gross.
Anyway, not only did this teach me about Texas Hold'em,
sure.
This taught me how to eat an Oreo correctly. Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
John Malkovich.
Nice,
hey,
right?
The thing, sorry.
You mean
I lost
his towel?
It would have been a different movie if you said final boss, which is John Malkovich. You would have had, you know, like in a lot of like over the top or whatever, you have like levels like in a video game. So you have the first boss, the second boss, whatever. Sure. I would have eaten that as well. You get a taste of that because they go and play different rooms. Mm-hmm. So they go and see the Greeks when Worm is doing the planning. Yeah. I love that section of the movie.
It's a great montage. Yeah.
It's a great montage. It's like a really good montage. Like challenges, right? And you move on to the next. That's why the scene with the cops hits, because it's right before resolution.
Yeah.
It's right the before the end, and then boop, you get knocked to the start again.
Sure.
And they do have a little bit of that, because you see, he's from ER as well as lots of other things, but Goran, I'm going to butcher his name, Višnjić, Croatian actor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
the fuck is he?
He's the guy who he's sitting
he's
in
Roman
a pair.
Roman and Maurice. He's one of the pair of Roman and Maurice.
Yeah,
the two and Russian outfit guys.
They just keep chatting.
That guy.
They keep chatting and chatting and chatting, and then they almost want to kill Edward Norton.
But you know
then...
what's funny? That's what makes this movie cool. It's because at some point in our lives we've met dudes like that, and that's when you know the moment they're on screen. When I think it's Matt Damon doing Ben Affleck. When Ben Affleck goes, which is Damon. Going, those are Russian outfit guys. And it's a warning. It's like, how the fuck? Why would you? And you feel it. As the viewer, you go, don't.
Right.
Yeah, they're not the preppy college dudes. They are definitely like that one step before.
Those are the guys that you meet in your life that go from smiling at you to stabbing you.
Yes.
Like that.
100%.
And the fact, it kind of remarks our reckless Worm can be. What was that? Thumbs up.
I saw that.
Yeah, no. A special segment's going to happen soon.
What's going to happen now?
Is it a Thundercats segment?
We have got a 1 out of 10 review from Wendy O. Done on June 21st, 2001.
Is she related to Sandra O? Go ahead.
This is a snoozer. Have to watch them play cards and watch them some more, and then a big finale, they play cards. What a waste of time. Thank you.
Wow.
Wendy O, June 21st, 2001. 1 star.
Motherfuckers. I'm telling you. That's the reason why there's only upvoting or downvoting on IMDb, because I want your home address, dude. You're going to write something? I want to know where you live. Yes. Dude, I'll put mine down as well. Come over.
Are you guys fans of Jay and Silent Bob at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
The best. What the fuck is the internet? Yeah. You are the ones who are the ball lickers. Dude, when they actually went to people's houses at the end of the movie and kicked the shit out of that kid, it was the fucking best.
It would improve the very fabric of society. People would take responsibility for their fucking words, all right?
You're gonna, the very fabric of the universe.
It is. All right, so many keyboard warriors, no more.
I know.
You get, this is Zumba, Ricky, and Steve, and Kev.
Dude.
What'd you say, motherfucker? What'd you say? That's right.
That's why the internet's great. You can hide on the internet behind your keyboard.
No.
There's no accountability.
Let's jump to our favorite sequences or scenes or composite shots.
Kev, you go first. Favorite sequence.
Favorite sequence? Like, what are you talking about? Visually, acting?
Anything.
What?
Your favorite bit in this movie?
Oh,
the bit
man,
that I brings don't... you back to this movie over and over again.
Two things. The
Matt
sequence,
and Damon.
The sequence with Matt and Damon. No. The sequence with Knish and Mike right after he loses the entire thing at the beginning of the movie.
With the smoke from the pothole in New York?
The steam is coming off.
The sidewalk. Yeah.
The lights are perfect. The way that the shot is just, it's absolutely
beautiful,
gorgeous.
Shot.
It's so fucking noir. It's oozing noir. That and just any sequence in Teddy KGB's.
Have you ever gambled?
No, I'm not a gambler at all, actually.
You never did?
Nah, I just, like, I never won. So I was always like, fuck that.
Before you go to your next favorite sequence, I can easily tell you that Matt Damon actually acted that very well. When you're gambling, if you lose a large amount of money, usually the shift in temperature between inside and outside, it's when you get outside where you are that reality hits you, because you are back in control.
Fuck yeah.
That fucking hit home. Because you just fuck, it feels like the entire world has collapsed.
Yeah.
It's fucking brutal. And that sequence, when Kanesh is talking him through it, it's...
It's great. I don't know. Like That's my direct answer to your question. Like, what brings me to this movie? What do I hold in my head? What do I see? That, and I see the inside of Teddy KGB's. Just the whole thing. But if I could have, well, I guess I could save that. I want to hear what everybody else has to say.
No, you got a second sequence. You got another one. You said two.
No. It wasn't a sequence. Two. I was just going to talk about how the locations that they used in this film, the choices in cinematography and lighting. And I talk about this in other movies. I've talked about this in other movies. You feel,
you get a sense of
where
place,
you
right?
Are.
Yeah.
Right. You,
yeah.
You exactly. Would you say sense of space?
Sense of place. Yeah.
Sense of place and space. You feel where they are. Right. It's like you can almost smell that fucking stale cigarette smoke in Teddy KGB's.
100%.
Like when they go into grandma's for some reason, that one scene when they go to grandma's. And it's
through
right
the
before
girl,
Worm,
the girl answering Worm, the door going.
Yeah, when Worm nopes out, it's like a gray overcast day here, you know, and it's like it's so New Englandy, man, and it's so like New Englandy winter, and it's like you can just like you can feel the cold, man. You can feel that like wet cold fucking creeping into your bones. You know what I mean? When they go into that seedy joint, like you can just feel it. You know, like that's what's great about this movie is like you can feel all those places. You know, and that's the director. Cinematographer, like it's fantastic. I just love that.
Well, we know it was filmed in winter. We know it was filmed basically in most of New York, and it has that feel directly associated to it. I think the only scenes which weren't filmed in New York directly were the ones which were filmed in New Jersey, which was the college.
Mm.
As somebody who spent some time in the States. You get to see this kind of coldness on a winter's day in, say, New York, especially when the frost is biting in, and it has so much of that.
There's also the contrast between the city that we, by proxy, know so well as the viewer to this underworld. It just really, really works. It really does. Yeah.
It's great.
You know what? You know what else, Steve? I think that's cool is that even though it was shot pretty much entirely in New York, the director does a great job of not making New York a character in this fucking movie.
Exactly.
It's not like
that would have taken away from. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no standpoints. It's dark alleys. It's streets.
It doesn't take the attention away from the city and the world around us.
It doesn't take the attention away from the characters and the relationships of the characters, and that's what makes this film a freaking knock out of the park, dude.
Yeah.
Ricky?
Oh, can I just add a little thing? The only time that they mark a suburb of New York is actually through the narration. So visually, yeah, you don't really know where you are until Matt Damon says somewhere down on West Manhattan and things like that. Yeah. For me,
there's also the last shot of the movie as he leaves the city.
This is West New York. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, the scene that got me this time, and like everybody else, there's so many scenes and there's so many shots and things. The scene that got me this time was actually Joe's character, Gretchen Mol, when Mike comes back and she knows he's been gambling and he goes, I'm just going to take a shower. I'm just going to go take a shower. Okay. I'm going to take a shower. And it's that whole sequence of her finding the money. And instead of confronting him, she just puts the money on the side
and just
goes. And there's no speech in that scene.
It's
and
fucking great.
Everything is just hit note perfect in that scene.
I agree.
I was actually questioning Steve lying to me about watching this movie for the first time because he has a tendency to do this. Steve feels very comfortable when he comes here because he does whatever the fuck he wants and that elevates our friendship. Mm. He tends to shout at the screen. So it's us watching the movie and as he's getting into the shower, he starts going, I wouldn't make these allowances for anybody else. He starts doing that. It's like, get the fuck out of here. I'm watching a movie. Get the fuck out of here. But because we're friends, he starts shouting at the screen going, she's gonna find the money. She's gonna find, and I'm going, yeah, man. She's gonna find. She's gonna find the money. And I was thinking, did you, Steve? Am I bullshitting? Were you doing that or not?
You're not bullshitting at all.
It reminded me of my mom watching The Bold and the Beautiful when we were kids, and she was shouting at the screen. And you remind me of my mom, Steve.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother. Mother.
Dude, wow. I do not remind you of your mum.
You do.
Because that's kind of an Oedipus complex going on from a male.
Why are you pointing into the gutter, dude?
So, but
we have a maternal friendship.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. Ooh. So, yeah, okay. I was doubting it, man.
Going back to that scene.
Yeah, never watched it before.
Please.
All right, going back to that scene. You know, I think about the scenes with the professors and all of that stuff. That scene was like what you were saying about how Matt Damon felt like outside or when he lost all the money.
Sure.
There are so many scenes like that, and I think that's a perfect, like, true human emotion scene.
Yep.
She doesn't confront him. She knows what he's been doing. She wants to believe that maybe she's being paranoid, but the minute she finds the cash, she's like, I've got to go. It's brilliant.
It's great.
I agree. It feels like a fictionalized fight, though, because I can tell you that's not what a girlfriend would do. There's a lot of shouting before that happens.
But maybe it happens nine months later.
People can be very quiet when they walk out.
Definitely.
I will say that for a start.
Yeah.
But because it's already planned in their head, they understand that if they go down this route again, that is the end of that relationship. And I've done that.
Yeah.
My favorite part, which is exactly the same point which Ricky said. The two scenes were one with the money because it's so freaking realistic.
Yeah.
It's the idea that you don't do that shit.
Mm.
And then there's the other side of it, which is the conversation between Matt Damon and John Turturro
about the one in the sauna.
Yeah. And that is basically, just perfect.
You know,
it's great.
That's it.
This time there is no money.
There is no money.
You can see that Michael makes a mistake there. He says something he doesn't mean to say. And it hits exactly the way it does because it's a very subtle performance from Turturro. He's a phenomenal actor, but you can see him genuinely being hurt by it. It's like he's got that, like, oh, this is what you're fucking going to do to me now after I helped you without saying it. But it does hit him. You know, it's like it's two men arguing here. And at one moment, there's that look of you ungrateful motherfucker.
Totally.
I was there when you needed someone the most, and then you do this to me. Yeah. But he does have a point, and it's a point that hurts because he had to make the choice at some point in his career as a poker player.
Given you the playbook that I made off my own beats, I've given you the, he doesn't say this part, but he goes, you know, it's like, I've given you the truck. I've given you this. Yeah. I offered to help you. I often just offered to stake you all this. And now you're going to tell me that I don't have any fucking balls. Fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's just the fact that at the beginning he goes, what do you need? 500? Do you need 1,000? And then he goes 15,000. It's like, whatever it was.
My favorite sequence.
And he goes, Steve? I'll give you 1,000. Was I going to buy you a day?
Yeah. Is it me now? Can I go?
You can go.
Okay. Because I'm dying too. Sorry.
Are you?
Are
you dying?
No, I can't sense. No. My impatience is immortal. My favorite sequence is a little interlude, and it's when Famke Janssen goes to see him. She goes over to tell him the situation and how it's spiraling, and the way he handles that, it kind of makes the scene work, because instead of exploding right away, it kind of mounts. His frustration mounts to the closer of this sequence that makes even more sense. It's just well crafted. That's all. It seems it's subtle, but I really like it. Franky Jensen goes over, and not only has to exercise self control in his response, but he has to do it twice, because right before she leaves, she goes, I could stay if you want me to.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an attractive woman. They have a connection. Right. He's going through. So solace, relief is there, right there. So not to take it, which it's a contradiction in terms for this character, because poker is marred, or gamblers are marred by a lack of impulse control.
Sure.
And here he does something that requires a lot of control.
I know.
He says, which is weird. Yeah, which is it's not weird, but the scene works because of what happens at the end of it, and I'm getting to it. Right. He goes, no, just, and he lets it go, and it's believable. And as soon as the door closes, he's just standing around an empty house, and he throws the fucking glass.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the loss of control.
Yeah. That's right.
That it comes at the expense of an object. So you're kind of intoxicated by a character that is full of contradictions, because gambler is, I can tell you, it's a compulsion.
Sure.
So for him to say, no, I'll fuck you, or just go with it, that would have made more sense. But it's just that he has to keep going against it and do the right thing. Not because of consequence. That actually, that scene makes very little sense if he didn't throw the glass at the end of it. You need that. You need that kind of loss of control that lashes out.
It's interesting that you bring this up.
One of my favorite sequences in the movie.
I like that. And that's a good one. You know, from the jacket hanging off the shoulder, the whole very flirtatious, but you know, like the whole thing, the kiss, and how he kind of just doesn't even acknowledge any of it. You know what I mean?
Like, I think he does. Almost. Though. I think he does.
Subtextually, yes.
Yeah.
Subtextually,
but
yes.
It's even his response. How he applies diplomacy to it. You can see he's fucking seething, but it doesn't show.
Thanks. I'll see you later.
Yeah, because he said, "Don't worry, I'll sort that out." But all of a sudden, boom! Like reality sinks in. It's like, what is this? $7,000 in by now? No, is it?
Yeah. Two original. He just gave her 1,000, and he gives her 1,000 right there.
This is when the situation gets worse afterwards.
Yeah.
So, it's just the way he handles it. It's like, I'll fucking deal with. So again, it also reinforces the friendship with Worm. So all the stuff that you guys that I missed out at the beginning of the movie, which is implying that Worm is really fucking taking the rap for something, because otherwise you wouldn't. You just wouldn't.
I think a huge part of the film, like the journey with Mike, is about control, controlling his impulses, when he does it and when he doesn't do it.
Yeah, I think the movie is not glorifying gambling, but it's elevating poker as a form of gambling that requires more, that is rooted more in skill than luck. And that's also like a bold claim, because it's, you know, it's still gambling.
Sure.
It's still gambling. It's time to talk about John Malkovich, Teddy KGB.
Man, the myth, the legend.
Yeah, I mean, I love John Malkovich, and a lot of people, I've watched a lot of interviews about this and about John Malkovich's accent. And the one thing that a lot of people said was like, oh, how good was his accent? And, oh, he spent so much time with a Russian actress and she wrote it down phonetically, or he wrote down phonetically, got her to say it and wrote it down phonetically. I did not rate his accent at all.
No, but don't you think that's intentional? Almost it's cartoonish.
It may have been, but like, you know,
you know what? I was going to say to you, the fuck do you know is Russian, but one of your best friends is Russian. Yeah. So, Phil.
And, and I've known a lot of Russian speaking friends through him and all of that stuff. So, it's crazy that, like, a lot of Americans think it's a really good Russian accent.
But is it possible that they probably meant to say that it's his performance? It's memorable, dude. He's a memorable villain in this. No, he's not a villain. He's an antagonist in this.
Yeah.
You know.
That whole, like, you know, him like fucking the TV thing was a bit
great.
I mean, you said cartoonish. You're right, cartoonish. But it's almost like that step above, like,
you know,
the
theme
and the feeling of the film is. It's that little step above where you're sort of like, but I thought I was watching a serious film about addiction, and now I've got John Malkovich being like, are you school the poochie? You know.
Right at the beginning because that's John Malkovich, it's a testament to how good of an actor he can be, right? Because when we meet him, Matt Damon goes up to the counter and there's this little interaction. He almost has his back, such nonchalance, right? It's like, you don't know what the fuck I'm going to do in front of the camera in a moment. But it's very like passing, like it's just nothing. He almost gives it back to the camera and he gives approval to the guy that gives him the chips at the beginning. So he looks at Matt Damon, he goes, yeah, just, and it's subtle. You think that's going to be like a cool, subtle character. And then after that, he fucking goes all the way to 11, full Sputnik.
It's almost like a Nicolas Cage performance for John Malkovich.
It's extremes.
Which Malkovich is kind of like that, man. To be honest, he's got that sort of edge like Cage has, you know, where he can just like get crazy like that. And I think that's
love him.
It's kind of one of his things. I like it.
Yeah, I want to inch these all the way through Burn After Reading. Ricky, we should have done
that.
That's a great movie. This is the interesting thing about it, because you're looking at two actors, Ed Norton and Matt Damon, who are like at the early part of their career. Mm. And then you're looking at John Turturro and John Malkovich, who are like midway through their career.
Yeah.
Right. And to have John Turturro playing probably one of the best John Turturro performances he's ever done, and he's doing it very mildly. And then having John Malkovich, before he was doing very serious roles like, you know, Dangerous Liaisons, all of that stuff, in this film is the start of his like crazy peak. Because after this, he does Con Air. After this, he does Being John Malkovich. So this is like the first moment where it's like crazy John Malkovich is in.
Well, you just got to mention the fact that both John Malkovich and Matt Damon did Ripley movies.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Also, Turturro in 1998 was in another little movie called The Big Lebowski. Nobody fucks with the Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Ricky, it is ratings time.
Yes.
Who wants to go first?
Should we let our guest go first?
Yes.
I think we should.
Guest. That's a very generous moniker. Thank you. This movie, it's an easy 10. It's a 10. I don't even have a niggle with this movie. Like, I think I could probably nitpick something, but I'd have to think about it for a minute. Like, when I go through a movie, obviously, as somebody that spent a lot of time on stage as an actor, like, I love watching actors. Like, that's a big thing for me. But it's the whole package, too. So cinematography, choices in direction, absolutely the actor's choices, the casting, that's massive. The music, all of these elements come together. And these other things that we've mentioned during the course of the show, all those things come together to make just an excellent movie. And it's amazing, like, as I think back now to how utterly dismissive I was when I saw the trailer for this movie back in 98. And I was just like, that looks so fucking stupid. I would never watch that. That looks ridiculous. Like a stupid poker movie. Like, who the fuck wants to watch that? And I'm like, I mean, like, I love this movie. It is so good. So yeah, easy 10. It's gotta be 10 handlebar mustaches like worms at the fucking prison. Biggity bam.
The Bushy Hatfield. All right.
That's right. Steve.
Okay, so I'm going to rate it an 8.5 crisp $100 bills.
I like that.
Reason why I'm doing this is my first time watching this.
No nostalgia either, yeah.
There's no nostalgia. It's
yeah, a massive nostalgia for me.
For me, it's a beautifully crafted movie. The cinematography, the sound design, the acting is really good. This is before Matt Damon became Matt Damon.
Yeah.
So this is like... So for me...
Matt Damon. Matt Damon. We didn't get to do it once, so let it all out now.
Matt Damon. So for me, this is a good, strong movie. I don't play poker, never play poker. I don't get the ins, I don't get the outs. That sounds
like a poker term right there.
Sure.
But the idea that, context is context, and I don't get the context. No. So it's just a lot of people losing money and occasionally winning it.
Mm.
That's it.
Interesting.
What was the score?
8.5
crisp dollar bills.
Yeah, $100 bills.
$100 bills. Yeah.
Because I'm bougie.
Okay. You were bougie before the 1,200 pound bill for your washing machine, which you've lost. You played poker against your washing machine and lost.
Ponzi.
Now, it sounds like money laundering to me, by the way. So,
oh yeah.
Okay, that's all right.
Cha-ching.
Normally, I would be a gentleman and prompt Ricky to give us his rating, but I am terrified of him stealing shit from me.
Could I ask you to let me go first? Because I think everyone's going to hate me.
You have the same fear. I'm not going to let you do that.
My fear is that you're going to go last.
You're going to go last. Okay. Okay.
Great. We're going to end with everyone hating me, so that's fine.
That's fine.
So could be better.
Originally, I rated this movie like in the 9s or even the 10s, right? Mm-hmm. And it's gone down in my estimation, not because I enjoyed it any less or because I don't all the there's no nostalgia attached to this either. However, I did find this movie extremely glamorous in 1998, and I did mention that I had a stint with gambling when I was younger. And this movie is partly responsible for feeding that fire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not even, that's not even the reason, but there's something, you know. However, I have one gripe with this movie, and it would have remained in the 8s and 9s and almost like 10s if I didn't notice something on this viewing. There is some fat on this movie that almost, like if I had the time, I would re-edit this and strip like 25 minutes out of it. It's almost like 2 hours. It's 2 hours long, and it doesn't need to be. It really doesn't. There's like, I think 90.
Where do you think it's heavy?
I just think that it's just, there's a little bit of fat on it. Like it has a running time of a full 2 hours, and I'm not saying that it drags, but on this viewing, it's a niggle that I have. You said that you don't have any, and this is the one that I developed on this viewing. I just thought, damn, it's a shame, because now I'm beginning to value something tight. Like one of the movies that I enjoyed the most that we covered on the show lately, it's a movie that I misguidedly thought I'd seen before, which until we watched it and then realized, holy shit, and I had a hell of a time. And it was Blood Simple. Blood Simple at the moment stands as my top 10 of movies that are super tight. There isn't a single sequence or detail that you're giving as the viewer that it's not, it's the very definition of Chekhov's gun is imbued in that movie. Right. Please rewatch it. I suggest that you rewatch it, because I had two messages from people, and I saw a friend today that listened to our episode and then watched the movie. And they didn't even, like, the focus of the conversation wasn't even, oh, you guys were right. It's like, I really enjoyed watching that. And, and the reasons were the same reasons. And it's rare. If I want character development, if I want something that that runs longer because it needs to, I'll go to an episodic format. I'll watch television.
Sure.
You know, because there's very good content made that way. Sure. And it's my choice if I want to delve further. But when you watch a movie, particularly if it's a good one, you're holding me ransom now. This isn't shit enough for me to walk away. In this case, this is great. So now, and I'm not saying that this movie imposes upon you as a viewer. Mm-hmm. I'm pissed off because it almost has the right to do it, and it knows it. It just, I don't know. It's, for me, it felt like 25 minutes too long. And if it didn't have that, it would have been super tight. And it doesn't. The thing is, I can't even put my finger on it, because it doesn't really hinder the pacing of this movie. It doesn't really. The movie paces well. It's just unneeded. There's no need for it. It would have been better. A little bit better. However, I still rate it an 8. And an 8 is very, very high for me.
Yeah.
Very high. An 8 what? It's an 8 hot dogs. It's 8 hot dogs. It's the only time we see Worm eat in this, and he almost does it with disdain.
Yeah, he actually throws it down.
Well, it's not because he's not angry. It's because he's pulling him away from his main source of sustenance, which is gambling. When he goes outside it's like there's almost like a distaste for what humans need, which is sustenance and light and water and... So when you see him outside, it's like he's crawled out so he can keep going to his addiction. He's not looking after like a basic human need. And it's very, the way he channels this through, it's almost animalistic. When he goes outside, there's a rejection to the regular world. He just needs to go back, and convention as well. Because there's a moment, if you blink, you miss it, in which it's the first time that we see Matt Damon playing Ben Affleck. When he goes, dude, don't go back in there. And he turns around. So as the viewer, we see what Matt Damon was meant to see. There's a fraction of a second in which Worm turns around, looks at him, and then swings the door open and goes back in. And the look is like, he looks at him and shakes his head like, I'm not fucking doing that. and goes back right. in. So yeah, it's an eight hot dogs. Ricky?
Rick, I can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
Yeah, so I've got a feeling I'm going to get a little bit of hate here. I think I would have preferred my nostalgia goggles than the rewatch I just had. Like, I remember, okay. you know, this film in my brain had like one space and it was a very highly rated space. And this rewatch, may it have been the narration, may it have been the slow drip feeding of information where I was like, come on now, let's just do it. And again, I've talked very highly about this film, and this film has a lot of scenes in it that I will show my kids when they grow up. Do I want to watch this film again? I probably want to wait another 4 or 5 years to put this on again, but I feel like my nostalgic view of it is better than the film. So I always say if it's a 7, I want to watch it again. If it's below a 7, I don't want to watch it again. If it's above a 5, it's better than just average. This is better than average. This is way better than average. Do I want to see it again? Probably not. So I'm going to give it a 6.75. Check raising stupid tourists.
Ooh, I like that, man.
Before we go, Kev, what have we got going on at the moment?
Just the show. So for anybody out there that hasn't... I'm getting there. Anybody out there that hasn't listened, our show is in this episode, Everybody Dies. Chad and Ben and I cover films, sort of a science fiction bent, but we cover a lot of stuff, 80s throwbacks, that kind of thing. Similar to what these guys do, but a little bit different.
It's better.
Well,
it is. It is.
I think it's a little bit different. So check that out. We just did Tron, the original Tron. So check that out. And you can check us out on Instagram as well, at EBD Podcast.
I'm a fan of the show. Ricky, you're a fan of the show. Steve, mm-hmm. you're a fan of the show.
I'm a fan of the show, yeah.
And you, nice. Listening, you will also be a fan of the show. And on that note, this was Umba.
This is Ricky.
This is Steve.
And I'm Kev.
Bye!
Bye!
Bye! Hey, we're out.